Let's get to the headlines.
Hello and welcome to Healthcare Strategies Headlines.
Woo!
Today's episode, United Health Group faces HIPAA compliance scrutiny. Providers are warming up to AI.
What?
NIH and NSF team up to study ocean's impact on human health.
Shh.
And high telehealth use impacts care access and cost.
Wow.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Kyle Murphy, Vice President of Editorial Intelligent Healthcare, and I am joined as always by multimedia managers, whatever you, managing editor, Kelsey Waddell.
Hello.
You ascended through the ranks so quickly, it's hard to keep track of what your current title is.
I don't know what my title is.
He who controls the technology controls the company.
Wow. I'll just join ranks with AI and soon we will control the world.
Oh, yes.
Like an Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
I watched that. That was quite interesting.
Yeah. I predicted that it was going to be about AI because everything's about AI in 2024.
Except for our first headline.
Oh, yeah.
United Health Group has not yet issued a formal breach notification following a cyber attack. Yes, listeners, this cyber attack is still going on. Apparently, it just doesn't end.
Never
ends.
The
gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
As they continue to review the impacted data, a process that is expected to take several months. Whenever I see several, I assume seven. But in this particular case, it's seven or more. So
I think it's going to be much more than seven.
Yeah.
7 years, maybe.
Yeah. We'll do a postmortem then and finally realize what happened. Under HIPAA, entities have 60 days from a breach's discovery to report it. UHG's preliminary findings indicate the breach involved files containing personal and health information significant enough to potentially affect a large portion of the United States population. But there's no evidence of full medical histories or doctor's charts being exfiltrated. That's important in terms of what we know as protected health information. Notably, screenshots from the breach appeared on the dark web, but were only visible for a week.
Hmm.
7 days. With no subsequent data releases reported. Only 7 days, guys. It's cool.
Several days.
The Office for Civil Rights, OCR, has opened an investigation and issued FAQs focusing on compliance with HIPAA rules in the wake of the incident. UHG and Change Healthcare must issue breach notifications if applicable, and UHG has offered to manage these notifications for its customers. Amidst all of this, UHG reported a significant first quarter net loss of $1.4 billion.
Wow.
Though revenue saw a substantial increase, so I guess it didn't really hurt, attributed to growth across the services, despite the attack's financial impact. Yes, that's what happens when you run a massive company.
It's called premiums.
So, Kelsey, what are your thoughts on UHG's handling of the cyber attack? I know we've done a lot of talking about it with experts across the industry, but do you think their response has been adequate?
I think that there's been a lot of criticism about the response for good reason. We were talking earlier today even about the lack of acknowledgement of the role that consolidation played in this and the repercussions. From UHG, there hasn't been a significant amount of conversation on what role that played. But from the outside looking in, it's pretty clear that the repercussions were serious, given, you know,
given that healthcare has shut down. For a lot of people.
Yeah, right. Yeah, across multiple sectors of the industry as well, including even from providers to pharmacy to all these other usually siloed areas of the healthcare industry. Providers are warming up to artificial intelligence. Physicians are changing their tune a little bit on generative AI, according to a survey commissioned by Wolters Kluwer Health. Over two-thirds of the provider respondents in a recent survey, all of whom worked in large hospitals or large health systems, agreed that they were more likely to believe that using generative AI in health would be advantageous compared to the year before the survey.
You ever write notes? Typing stinks.
Yeah. 4 in 10 participants were so optimistic that they would be ready to use AI for interactions with patients at the point of care by the end of 2024.
Ooh.
More than half of the participants said that generative AI can help search medical literature, summarize EHR data, and save 20% or more on car insurance. No, 20% or more of their time spent in finding and evaluating data for clinical decision making, which is, as we all know, a key part of clinician burnout. Additionally, most respondents agreed that AI can support care coordination and interactions with patients, but providers still harbored some concerns about the technology. So it wasn't all rosy. Didn't receive a full A+. Primarily, They wanted to know about the content source. Most of the participants...
Don't we all?
Yeah, don't we all? Most of the participants agreed that ensuring that medical professionals were involved in the tool's training was essential to their AI tool selection process. Makes sense.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Vendor name also made a difference, with 76% of participants stating that they were more likely to use an AI solution from an established vendor.
Oh, not just Bob down the street?
Apparently not, which sucks for Bob. So
he's out of work again. Keep working, Bob.
Just got to keep building things, that's all. Obviously, Kyle, getting providers on board is key to AI adoption. So what do you think about this shift and what it says about the future of AI in hospitals and large health systems?
I wonder if some of the phobia, some of the fear around AI is just like you haven't used it. And when you use it and you realize how non-threatening it actually is, like you can do certain tasks very, very well, particularly when fed information that it just needs to format, recontextualize, all that type of jazz. But, you know, it clearly can't do these other things or with a high level of certainty. So it's not going to replace people with significant training and knowledge. It's just, it's not going to do that. But for summarizing some notes, I mean, come on. No one gets hurt from that. It's all documentation. And who knows, you know, who knows? Like when it comes to clinical documentation for claims purposes, who's to say you couldn't train the thing to actually generate notes in such a way that is much more compliant or adheres to contract rules so that claims don't get rejected or don't go into the adjudication process. So maybe it just streamlines everything because people are suddenly speaking the same language. So I think it's a big one. We know that documentation is a time suck. We know about pajama time. So hopefully this goes a long way towards addressing that. And we're not talking about AI replacing clinical decision-making. We're talking about AI taking care of this manual labor that is taking away from clinical decision-making in actual patient interactions.
Right. We just need more AI awareness.
AI awareness. Yeah, I'm going to start that campaign. Speaking of awareness and research, so the National Institutes of Health, NIH, and the National Science Foundation, NSF, are funding 4 new centers for ocean and human health. Mm. No, this is not Waterworld. You don't get to just live in the ocean.
Darn.
No. So they also are renewing support for 2 existing centers, but we can dream. We can dream. Water parks for everybody. The initiative, which involves a $42 million investment over 5 years, aims to investigate the health impacts of environmental and climate changes in oceans and the Great Lakes. Don't leave out the Great Lakes.
Interesting.
They are lakes. Yeah. They are lakes too.
Yep, they're water too.
Yeah, they got some salt in them. I think that's why. A significant focus of the research is on how microplastics, you've heard about those plastics, and nanoplastics, even smaller than the microplastics, in these waters affect human health. Who'd have thunk it? The stuff that you drunk would go into your system and make you unwell. Couldn't believe it. As these contaminants enter the human food chain, that sounds really weird, like are humans on the food chain, through seafood consumption and carry other pollutants like mercury, lead.
Yeah.
This research is crucial and explores the broader implications of ocean pollution on public health. Wow. Potentially guiding future pollution reduction efforts and public health policies. Individuals can do more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, use a water bottle and you can save the environment. I don't know who generates the plastic, but once we figure that out, we might be onto something. So Kelsey, we often talk about the environment in the healthcare world. When we talk about the areas where people live, you know, their neighborhoods, communities, things like that. But what are your thoughts on extending this kind of coverage, this reach, to talk about the substance that covers nearly 70% of the earth?
It's about time that we talk about this substance that covers 70% of the earth.
Oh my God, yes.
Well, it's just a time for Earth Day. So, you know, like...
Oh, it's true.
I think obviously this is a good reminder that environmental health is part of health and human health.
Hold on. Are you implying that we're part of this ecosystem?
You know, this might be groundbreaking, but we do live in the ecosystem, which makes us a part of the ecosystem.
Oh, wow. That's genius right there.
I know. It took a while to get there, but we're there finally. So
just a reminder to everyone, don't throw trash in the oceans. They're going to be watching now.
Yeah. Keep your trash to yourself.
All right. Let's end this on a high note. Give me something.
Speaking of high telehealth use, impacts care access and cost. Woo. Health systems that rely more on telehealth are reaping some benefits, according to a study of the Medicare population that was published in Health Affairs. The study found that patients in health systems with the highest rate of telehealth utilization had 2.5 telemedicine visits per person annually, and that telehealth visits made up over a quarter of all visits.
Wow.
In contrast, for patients in health systems with lower rates of telehealth use, 9.5% of visits were conducted via telehealth, and that's less than one visit per patient in a year. Ooh. Increased telehealth utilization in a health system appears to correlate with a higher number of patient outpatient visits.
Heard you could bill for that.
Yeah. The researchers found that more than 8 out of 10 telemedicine visits were a substitute for an in-person visit.
Oh.
Outcomes were also better for high telehealth health systems. They saw better drug adherence for metformin and statins.
Love a good statin.
Gotta love that statin. And they experienced a 14.4% decline in non-COVID-19 emergency department visits per 1,000 patients per year. Relative to low telehealth systems, that's a 2.7% drop.
Wow.
So the report didn't give a full A-plus for telehealth. However, there was no real difference in imaging services or laboratory tests per capita per year. And perhaps more significantly to some of our audience, spending
Ooh.
Was slightly higher
Cha-ching.
For high telehealth health systems, which saw a 1.6% relative increase in spending compared to low telehealth peers.
Mm.
And Kyle, you know, the report's goal was to influence telehealth policy and reimbursement in Medicare. How do you think we should evaluate this evidence? What do you think about the evidence about telehealth's benefits and costs, and how should it impact policymakers' decisions?
It seems as if there are kind of logical use cases for telehealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and talking about medications, ensuring drug adherence, medication management, therapy, and things like that make a lot of sense where the in-person touch is more expensive and probably more inconvenient. And then there are other areas that have to be managed a little bit differently. You know, that whole component about laboratory tests and imaging, that's a lot of on-site type of stuff. So mm-hmm. it stands to reason that there wouldn't be an effect there.
Yeah.
But who's to know in the future whether testing could be somehow extended out into the neighborhood? I see a lot of Quest Diagnostics cars driving around. I don't know, but that's a whole different matter. But I would say,
what are they doing?
Yeah, what are they doing? What are they moving? I just know that their speed is monitored by GPS and they can't speed. So
oh, wow.
I always race them. I always race them from a dead start. But I think, you know, in general, telehealth has its role. It's not a replacement. It is very, very useful for certain quick exchanges, FaceTime and things like that, where people mm-hmm. need answers.
Yeah.
And in-person care is obviously important for other reasons. And, you know, we're still waiting for things to level out. But I think the more you can keep people out of the hospital environment unnecessarily, especially the ED, the better we're all going to be, because people who need that attention, those services are going to get them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's positive in general. You know, we obviously have to talk about reimbursement and payment parity and all that jazz, but we'll get there. But clearly it works,
especially
just like
healthcare.
This podcast.
Yeah, we work. Look at
Pretty
us.
Much every week until I take a vacation and go to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, that's been Healthcare Strategies Headlines. Thank you
Woo!
For joining us. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow.
Yes.
Give us a look on YouTube at Healthcare Strategies.
Yeah. YouTube. We're there.
Take care.
Bye.
Don't litter.
This is a Tech Target production.
Don't litter.